speak to you. As usual, the gospel story is rich with compelling action and surprising nuance. The first portion of the reading deals with homecoming. This homecoming must have been very important in the ministry of Jesus because it's recorded in all four of the gospels, at least in part. The verse we heard today by Mark is set in the harshest terms by far when compared to the other gospel books. Prior to his homecoming in Nazareth, Jesus had been in the wilderness of Galilee preaching the good news. He healed the sick with impressive miracles, and he fed great multitudes of people. On the Sabbath during this homecoming, we find Jesus teaching in the synagogue. The reaction of the town folk is immediate. We are told the people are astounded. They are amazed. The people wonder, where did this man learn all of this? At this point in the story, the reception turns pretty chill, at least in Mark's telling this story. In a recent meeting that I attended, our group was told an anecdote arose from another denomination who informed their children that the Episcopal Church was not a Christian church. My immediate, unrestrained response was, they should learn to read. If they can't learn to read, perhaps they should consider the symbols of the four crosses that we have on the high ridges that are above us in this church. I was chided about being snarky, and rightfully so, though this was the first time someone had used that term to my face. That was the first time I knew about it. This anecdote was not the first time that I heard similar comments about we Episcopalians. It was late evening, about supper time, and I may have been a bit peckish, so maybe I was being a bit unkind. Regarding Jesus in the temple, the home folks in the synagogue began to ask, is this teacher not a carpenter? They were saying to each other that they knew his mother Mary, telling one another, I know his brothers, and those are his sisters here with us. The hometown folks then took offense at Jesus. Maybe, they were thinking, who is this guy? I knew him when he worked in the carpenter shop. At this point, Jesus responds in what might be characterized as an uncharacteristic manner. In a manner that might be interpreted as snarky. Jesus tells his detractors that prophets are not without honor, except in their own hometown, or amongst their own kin, or in their own house. Maybe Jesus even thought, goodness gracious, what does it take to reach these people? You don't know. In the preceding 2 weeks of gospel lessons, we learned that Jesus had mastery of the wind and waves. He's awakened by the disciples during a storm on the water. Jesus calms the seas and chides the disciples by saying, have you still no faith? We're told that Jairus, a leader of the synagogue, brought Jesus home to lay hands on his daughter who was deathly ill. Before reaching the girl, the crowd informed Jesus and the leader of the synagogue that the child was dead. Jesus' response to the leader was, do not fear, only believe. Jesus said, little girl, get up. The young girl immediately got up from her deathbed and began to walk about, or if we learned last week, perhaps dance about. The crowd was then overcome by amazement. In contrast, today's story concludes with the following statement, and he was amazed at their unbelief. Jesus was amazed. This is distinctly different from all the other accounts of Jesus and his disciples, for the followers are the ones who are frequently amazed. And to my knowledge, this is the only account of Jesus being amazed. And why not respond in this very human manner? We know at the wedding in Cana that Mother Mary told Jesus a problem that the hosts were having about a shortage of wine. Jesus responded, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." We also know that Jesus did not appear very kind when he drove the money changers from the temple. Part of our faith statement refers to the human side of Jesus. We believe that Jesus is fully human and that he's fully divine. The expatriate poet T.S. Eliot succinctly described human events such as this homecoming in the last of his four quartets, his words. "We shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and to know the place for the first time." Despite the recent unpleasantness, Jesus resumed his circuit of the villages and went about his teaching ministry. I think there's a lesson here in perseverance. A great rabbi, a great teacher, would use this occurrence as a teaching event. Jesus commissioned the 12 and began to send them out in pairs. He gave them authority over unclean spirits. I find it interesting that in the months and years previous to this time, the disciples didn't really seem to fully get Jesus' message. They didn't seem to comprehend they were with a miracle worker, the Son of God himself, a healer of the sick, and a feeder of great assemblages. Their familiarity with the incredible earthly ministry of Jesus seemed not to allow the apostles to completely identify with his divinity. Of course, when the disciples are not quite fully believing, are not quite fully understanding, that is the point where I more fully identify with them. But here, Jesus sends them out, ready or not, and it seems not to matter. And yet, here we are today, people of the way, the product of those folks who went out to spread the good news, whether ready or not, whether confident or not, as prepared as they would like to be or not. And I am amazed by them. Jesus told his disciples to keep things simple. Take nothing for the journey except a staff. Take no bread, no bag, no money. Wear sandals and do not wear two tunics. In other words, with the exception of the staff, take only what you have on your back. The minimal traveling supplies lead us to believe that the pairs of apostles were to have faith that their holy shepherd would supply their needs. The pairs of preachers were to stay at the house where they were first welcomed. I remember a quote from my childhood, "Son, dance with who brought you." Meaning, of course, that whomever first offered you hospitality is basic and should be inviolate lest we exploit the offering of that hospitality to our own personal gain. Jesus continued with his instructions. "If folks do not welcome you or they refuse to hear you, leave. And when you do, shake the dust off your feet as a testimony against them." We Episcopalians expect a great deal from preachers in our church. We expect them to carefully study the appointed scriptures. We expect our preachers to read from these appointed lessons a sermon that is enriching, as well as introducing insights that cause us to ponder the scripture in a new and interesting way. In essence, to allow us to hear the scriptures again for the first time. Most preachers work hard to do just that. Jesus implies that some folks will refuse to hear the good news, but the preacher's job is to let go and not be dismayed, but to move on to the next house, to the next sermon. We sometimes forget that we listeners have a greater job than to just sit in the pews and evaluate the sermon. Our job is to listen to what is said and to inwardly digest those words, to discern the human condition as it is portrayed in that sermon, and to best consider how that message applies to us. Think on this. The short, quiet period we have after the sermon each Sunday is there for a reason. In part, it is a moment to contemplate God's holy word in a new context and to consider the scriptures again for the first time. Thank you.